Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a surprise guest, Tammy DeVille. We're going to be talking about her absolutely incredible book about a subject matter that we're mostly aware of, but wow, she really did her homework on this one. It's called Changing the World on a Tuesday Night. Now, this sounds a little strange, I am sure, to you. You'll say, what's so special about a Tuesday night? Well, this is a publication about how people make a difference. And you need to be aware of it, as I needed to be aware of it, because it's people that do the work, create the action, make the difference, contrary to a lot of things that we are bombarded with every day. Tammy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. So great to be with you.
Well, I'm delighted to have you as a guest. I was so impressed with this book because when I met you at the Publicity Summit in New York, I had, like so many other people in media, to interact with people on a very, very short basis. And I was impressed with the subject that you said. This was about people, nonprofit, this type of thing. But I didn't really get into it until I actually went through the book. And I was so impressed with the individuals. Now, you are a very active woman. You yourself have been involved in volunteer work. You're a woman that really likes what you do. Mm-hmm. And you do something with volunteer spotlights to volunteermatch.org. And you're always looking for the unique in the volunteer environment. What got you into this, Tammy? Why did this become such a significant part of your life?
Well, that's a great question. I, like many people, I was a busy working professional and had that desire, which I think nearly all of us have, to make a difference in our communities and in the world. And I finally just something clicked one day to just, until I take action, nothing's going to happen. So I went on the internet and searched around and stumbled upon a website which you mentioned, volunteermatch.org. I'm a huge fan of theirs. They have a great database of opportunities. And I knew I liked working with children, and I did a search on there and found an organization that supports homeless women and children. And I started volunteering there on a regular basis on Thursdays from noon to 1. I work independently from home, so I have a flexible schedule and was able to do it in that midday hour. And going into it, I really thought that it would be difficult to commit to on an ongoing basis, and I wasn't sure exactly what I'd get out of it. And as I got into it, what I discovered was it was so easy for me to just keep that commitment on a regular basis blocked out of my calendar. It was non-negotiable. I was there every Thursday. And when I left, no matter what was going on in my life, I was so much more inspired when I left. So I was surprised, pleasantly, about my experience, and I would share it with people. And what I noticed when I shared it with people was the reaction I got, the response, was nearly identical. Either people were already volunteering, and they would share with me what they do, which I loved hearing about, or they would say, wow, I really wish that I was doing something. I feel like I should be doing something. It's really great that you're doing it. They would say that almost verbatim, the same words, and then they would say, but it just feels like it's a really busy time in my life right now. I couldn't fit it in. And, or they would say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I would enjoy doing. I don't know what interesting opportunities are out there. How did you find yours? Mm-hmm. So just hearing that similarity, I thought, wow, it seems like nearly everybody feels exactly the same way, and all they need to know is that they can fit it in and how and what kinds of opportunities are out there.
Well, your book, definitely, Changing the World on a Tuesday Night, is really so informative, and it just opened up my paradigm of being aware of what you can do. There's a lot of things that a lot of organizations I have been aware of, but what impressed me with your book were the stories of the individuals that had made certain choices. And I think lots of times when people look at doing volunteer work, that's almost as if this is going to be something laborious. It isn't. It really isn't when people are doing something they really like. Now, you have some very interesting statements put out throughout your book. One of them is that 44% of adults volunteer, and two-thirds of these volunteers began volunteering their time when they were young. Adults who began volunteering as youth are twice as likely to volunteer as those who did not volunteer when they were younger. And I thought, this is very significant. And that's why when parents have youngsters, involving them in activities where they're aware of what goes on in the community, bringing them into the exposure of different needs, so often in our world today, because we're so involved in technology, there is a disassociation. People seem to think that things take care of themselves. Well, in some respects they might, but we have to be participating in life. And when you isolate yourself away, you sort of lose touch with what I call the human connection. And that's what I think the stories in your book bring forth in a wonderful way. One of them that I wanted to talk about was the guardian angel. Now, I've been aware of the guardian angels for years, and I worked for a police department in Inglewood, California many years ago, and the guardians were not around at that time. It wasn't needed. As the years went on, there was a special need, and you have a wonderful story in here about John, who is a member of the Guardian Angels. When did this group start, and where did it start?
Well, that is a great question. I may not have the exact answer off the top of my head for that one. I believe it started in California, and the gentleman who started it, his name is Curtis Sliwa, and he and his now wife are very active in the organization, and it was decades ago. And when it first started, as probably when you were familiar with it, it was very much widely known in the media. So lots of community members were aware of the organization and its members and what they do. And the gentleman that you referenced in the book, John, he's been with Guardian Angels for over 20 years. And he mentioned to me when we were interviewing that he feels like their organization is not as publicized these days. So when people see them in the community, they're kind of surprised that the organization is still around, and obviously pleasantly surprised because they show up, you know, in areas where there's an increase of crime or there was an incident and the community is often requesting additional security or police support, then those members show up and then people become familiar with them again. So their ranks are also shifting. In the beginning of the organization, they had a lot more youth. Their organization now consists more of people of the average age of around 30. So John is very interested in getting the organization more exposure again and involving more young people. Because as he got involved with it, as you read in the story, it was a great way for him to be involved with a peer group that was up to something good rather than a peer group of gang members that are obviously up to no good in the community.
Well, and that's true. And a lot of the gangs are brought about because there isn't, and so many of them are male, although we have an increase of female gangs, the males don't have a good role image. And so to get an identity, they come together collectively. And some of the things that they have to do are just absolutely horrific. I mean, they make up these things that are so hideously violent and ugly and predatory. And it's, you've got a bunch of young men and their testosterone is raging. And, oh boy, you have got a pattern for trouble unless you have mature males around. And that's what's so significant about the guardian angels. And they have done so many wonderful things. And in your book, you talk about 136 safety patrol chapters throughout the world. And it maintains a volunteer-based organization, including inner-city youth. And they make the youth become a part of the solution. Because
Exactly. It's
the youth, the peer group, that has the connection here. It really does make a difference. And when the young people are wanting to break away from something, if they have support, that is just absolutely, just wonderful. So this is one of many stories that you have in your book relative to volunteers. And I want to go to another one that I was intrigued with. It is about disasters. In the United States, we have a plethora of them. We just get announcements in the last couple of weeks. It's been one right after the other. Floods, terrible things that are going on. And you have this woman who is a part of the Medical Reserve Corps, and her name is Alicia. And she just got a wonderful story to tell. And someone who really would like to be associated with something like this, it's a wonderful opportunity. Tell us about Alicia.
Yeah, Alicia is great. She, at the time that she first got involved with the Medical Reserve Corps, had no medical training. She was interested in the medical field. She was interested in becoming an emergency medical technician, but she didn't have any training. And so she was concerned at first that she had nothing to contribute. As many people see disaster relief efforts happening on the television, they know that people that respond are highly trained, and many of them, obviously in a medical reserve corps, are medically trained. And what Alicia discovered and shares with people is that there are so many different skills and duties that need to be accomplished during a disaster and in disaster preparation that really anybody can contribute. So if you show up with a desire to get trained and to find your place in those types of organizations, they will find a way to use your skills. And Alicia did go on to get her EMT training, so now she can volunteer in that capacity. But even before that, was able to, find fulfillment and find her place in a community of people that were passionate about the same thing that she is, which is another thing that I find is kind of a side benefit that people don't anticipate going into volunteering, and that is that they develop a whole new community of like-minded people and people that they can share their lives and their passions with.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's brought out, you have such a well-stated story about the individual and about the organization that they're a part of. This is the Medical Reserve Corps, and all she commits is like 10 to 20 hours a month. And she was involved in the Hurricane Katrina cleanup, and she said there's just so much that you can learn and that you can do. And she made a comment that it was a good moral compass for her, which I found an interesting statement. And she said she's learning patience from being involved in this. She said a lot of disaster preparedness is waiting. You rush to get the training, and then you wait. And then you hope you never have to use it. And here we are with some critical crises. I have a friend that's part of a rescue unit for disaster. She flew out last night because she got orders to go out, and she's involved with some government groups, and they go out and organize and work with people. And it's just, it's so important. There are so many different levels of need. Let's talk about Nancy, who is tutoring dropouts. The amount of dropouts in schools is phenomenal. I'm in the Pacific Northwest, and it is amazing to me, the number of dropouts. I don't know of any generation that hasn't had this experience. And there's circumstances, various ones, that contribute to this. But she became a part of a group called Operation Bootstrap, and she only donates 2 hours a week. Let's talk about this organization and Nancy.
Yeah, I love Nancy's story for several reasons. As you mentioned, she only volunteers 2 hours per week. That's all it takes. And she has a routine. It's Monday from 5 to 7 in the evening, so it fits in nicely after work. but she's been doing it for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And that's something to find very common with, I call them serial volunteers. Mm-hmm. They realize that just a little bit of time can make an impact, and especially if you commit to it over a long period of time. And the other thing I really love about Nancy is it's an example of kind of another reason that people get into volunteering. One of the reasons that's pretty common, and it's illustrated in a couple of other profiles in the book, when people are a recipient of giving, they often then want to give back in turn. Someone who, you know, received services at a homeless shelter for kids is now counseling kids at a homeless shelter. Nancy is the other extreme, which is she's had a pretty great life. Mm-hmm. She said, I've had a great life. My parents paid for my education. I had a wonderful family. I had everything that I needed. And in that, I realized that I wanted to give to those who didn't have everything that I had. Mm-hmm. So education obviously was important to her. She mentioned that to me, that she felt fortunate to have an education and to have a college education that was funded by her family. So with people who, for whatever reason, discontinued their education at an early age, she really is passionate about giving her time to give them the education that they are reaching out for. You know, these are people who, yes, they did drop out. Some of them, it was drug-related issues. Some of them, it was crime-related. They were imprisoned when they were young. Some were teen pregnancies. And then they came to a point where they wanted to complete their education. They wanted to get a GED and get a better job and move on with their lives. So these are people that are reaching out for the help, and Nancy, you know, feels a strong compassion for them.
I wanted to ask you a question. You have, I think, about 42 different organizations listed in the book. That's not, you know, just the stories. And the people that you were able to interview, how did you go about contacting these people? And when you said, I'm putting a book together, how did you approach them to contribute to this wonderful publication you've put together?
Thanks. That's a great question. I initially, or actually primarily, reached the volunteers through the nonprofit organizations. And I wanted to feature a diverse group of nonprofits. So I did make a list of some of the big ones that we've all heard of, such as Greenpeace and Big Brothers Big Sisters and PETA and the Nature Conservancy, Habitat for Humanity, organizations that people can relate to. They're, yeah, I've heard of them. I know a little bit about what they do in the world. So I wanted to include those. And then I also wanted to include smaller, local, regional nonprofits that no one has ever heard of that are doing really unique and amazing things in their communities. So I compiled the list of nonprofits as I went, and then reached out to them and let them know what I was doing. They were very enthusiastic about the project and were more than willing to connect me with volunteers that they thought had interesting stories to tell. And I did set a couple of parameters. One thing I said is I was looking for people who volunteer on a regular basis and didn't, you know, commit their whole life to it. Maybe averaged 5 hours per week, 3 to 5 hours per week. And then the other parameter was I wanted people who had busy lives, because most of us have busy lives. So I wanted people who either work full-time, or I have 2 full-time students and 2 full-time moms, because I wanted people to be able to relate to these stories. Okay, yeah, I see. She's busy, and she does something I find unique and interesting or inspiring. Okay, I can relate, and now I'm inspired to take action.
Mm-hmm. I really like your quote that you have in the book, Harold Whitman, "Do not ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that, because what the world needs is people who have come alive." I really like that quote, because I think that's what makes the difference. That's why Nancy has stayed with the teaching. That is why so many of the people in your book have been enabled to continue what they really love to do. And the one that comes to my mind foremost is Bundles of Love and a woman named Ruth. And she loves to crochet, and I loved her story because she just absolutely loved sewing and crocheting, and she would make mittens and hats and blankets, and then she'd hide them because her friends got tired of receiving all this stuff. They said, please don't make me anymore. I've got all these things that you made for me, and I don't need anymore. But she kept doing it because she had such a love for it. I've got a friend like that that's down in California. I've known her for years. She loves to crochet towels and do all kinds of things like this. And then it was because of an Oprah show that she found her own niche. Let's talk about Ruth for a moment because I think her story is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. I love her story, and I do love that quote. Obviously, I put it in the book, but it is one of my favorites. And what I really love about that and agree with you is that is what keeps people interested and engaged. And, you know, one of the other things, I kind of a side note that I like to share with people is people who haven't volunteered before go in with kind of an idealistic view. I'm going to save someone's life. I'm going to change the world in my first month. I'm going to make the biggest impact that organization has ever seen. That's how I was when I went into my first volunteering opportunity. And what you discover is the real payoff and the real fulfillment comes in small moments, small but profound moments. And sometimes there's just work to do. There are just tasks that need to be accomplished. What's going to keep you fulfilled and keep you inspired is that you love those tasks that you're doing. You love the work of it. And that's exactly like Ruth's story. She doesn't always get to see the babies that are born in poverty or the disabled babies that she makes special clothing for. She doesn't always get that payoff at the end of it because she doesn't have that direct contact with them. She knows the impact she's making, and more importantly, every moment that she's doing the thing she does to make a difference, she's loving it because she loves to crochet. And many stories in my book and many stories we could all find in the world of people who love to paint, love to take pictures, love to garden, love to teach music. That's their passion, and when they give that passion, it's a double payoff, if you will.
Absolutely. Now, what I found fascinating about Ruth is that Bundles of Love is an organization that sews blankets and baby items for babies born into poverty, as you said. And 10 years later, she's a regional coordinator for them.
Mm-hmm.
She recruits and manages other volunteers. She's got 200 people on her area distribution list and 60 to 80 who participate each month. Now, she's a homebody. She absolutely loves her home, loves her family, and she's got a client, Blue Cross Blue Shield, that is just so interactive with her. They have their people that donate hours, and she herself said that she saw people transformed because of the work that they were doing. And she even created a design that met a unique need of some very, very tiny preemie babies.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, is what life is all about. This is something where this woman absolutely loves what she does. And I think this speaks to men and to women both. We're talking about a woman right now who loves to sew, loves to crochet. A lot of people today would say, oh, that's so old-fashioned. Who needs that stuff anymore? Well, let me tell you, it makes a difference. And because everything she does is done with a feeling of love and really caring, that is touching every family, every mother whose baby is covered in these garments, and the volunteers that work with her. And so this is something, she's not out there beating a tambourine. She's in her home, she's working with people, but she's doing what comes from her heart and what she loves. And this photo you have of her is just absolutely wonderful because there's so much imagination that people are contributing in what they do. Now, one of the last ones that I want to talk about is Katrina, because this I just thought was awesome. How many times are you going to find a teacher for teaching chess? And that's what she does. And she's involved with an organization called Chess for Success. She's been with them 5 years. She commits 5 hours a week. Let's talk about Katrina, because obviously she loves this. I didn't even know there was an organization that, you know, encouraged volunteers to participate to teach chess. I didn't know about that. This is great. So let's talk about her.
Yeah, it's a wonderful organization and a wonderful story. And oftentimes, Chess for Success has teachers. It's an after-school program, and they have teachers in the schools who run these programs. But what happened at her son's school 1 year, her sons were getting a ton out of the program, and then 1 year there wasn't a teacher who had the time to coach the program, and she said, this program is going to happen. I see the impact on my boys and their fellow students. We're not going to let this program not happen. And she herself was still recovering from treatment for breast cancer. She had surgery. She was going through her rounds of chemotherapy and radiation, and not even that stopped her. So full-time mom and cancer survivor, still recovering, and she took this commitment on, and at one point was teaching at both of her children's schools. And she, you know, she took it on, she says, you know, kind of for personal reasons. She wanted her sons to continue in the program, and as she participated, she got such satisfaction from the impact that she saw it was having on other students. And she tells the story of one particular boy who didn't really know how to play chess, wanted to be involved, and his little brother would tag along in the after-school program. Even though he's a little too young for the program, she let him kind of tag along, and he was also learning. And he was a very quiet boy, didn't speak at all, but he would participate. And the older brother wasn't, you know, wasn't doing so hot at chess, but he was learning and participating. And by the end of the session, you know, was really starting to win games and went on to the competition at the end of the session. And the younger brother, who hadn't been speaking at all, started speaking and engaging in conversation with people. And what Katrina learned is that the children were in a staying in a special residential facility where their mom was being treated for alcohol abuse. So these boys obviously had a challenging childhood and were in the process of, you know, supporting their mom in recovery. And the way that the older brother told her that he got better at chess is he was teaching the people in the rehab center how to play.
Awesome.
Yeah, just so inspiring on so many levels, and such transformation of lives on so many levels.
I agree. Now, what I found even more interesting about this is that Chess for Success isn't a chess club. It's an educational program, and chess is a marvelous way to teach children and adults thinking processes, because you have to be able to see different ways of achieving the results that you want. And it's high-level thinking. That's how they describe it with learning chess. And it enables young kids to become even better in school. Their learning skills become sharpened. And I had no idea that Chess for Success, this organization, serves 3,200 elementary and middle school students in 83 schools in 16 school districts in Oregon and Washington, and all the students that participate in this receive 50 hours of after-school chess instruction. This is wonderful. I think this is just absolutely fabulous. Now, when I went through your book, I also found that you have a section in the back that allows people to make some choices about perhaps what they would like to do. And I like the comment, ordinary people change the world. I really believe that. One person at a time, it has a ripple effect. You've got websites listed for volunteers, how you can go about checking out different organizations. And there's just all kinds of things, nonprofit job listings. There's just so much good information that you have in here. Now, Tammy, if people would like to find out more about what you offer, what is your website?
The website is www.onatuesdaynight.com.
Onatuesdaynight.com.
Mm-hmm. And there you'll find many of the resources that are listed in the book as well. And you'll find that when you go to purchase the book online, $2 of every sale goes to a nonprofit that you get to choose. So you can choose from a list of the nonprofits that are featured in the book. And there's also an affiliates page where any nonprofit in the country can become an affiliate. We provide a link that they can put on their website. And so if their visitors click through to my page and buy the book, the $2 for that sale will go to their organization. So any nonprofit organization can use it as a fundraiser and really a win-win, raise some money and help inspire more people to volunteer.
Well, that is absolutely awesome. Tammy, your book, not only is it beautifully done, but you have so much good information in it, and I would recommend it highly to anyone. I think it's informative. I think the people that you've highlighted in this book give a wonderful demonstration of how their lives are fulfilled by doing what they love to do. And that commitment is empowering other people in their lives, and it's a wonderful example for all of us. Changing the World on a Tuesday Night, Tammy DeVille is my guest. Her name is TammiDeVille. I'm so delighted you were able to join me, Tammy. I wish you continued success, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thanks so much, Donna. I really appreciate it.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and chat with me, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. It would be my pleasure to do so. Give me a call at the toll-free number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And a quick like a bunny, I just wanted to let you know that as of June the 15th, I am going to be discontinuing my 800 number. This is something that's up on my website, and that is going to be changed as of June the 15th. It's going away. With the changes in technology, I'm finding that people just aren't using it. They're just calling me directly at my office. So that number is 253-582-5604. So in the interim, up until June 15th, that 800 number is going to be available. But after that, it will no longer be. So I just wanted to let you know about that. Okay, who do we have coming up? Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Joe. We're going to be talking about Yubby. Yubby is the name that Joe was given when he was a child. He was bullied incessantly. And as an adult, this man is making a commitment to educating kids and adults on how to deal with bullying in a very effective manner. So we're going to be talking with him tomorrow. On Monday, we are going to be talking about classical music. John Emlyn is going to be our guest. Not only are we going to be playing some classical music, but we're going to be talking with a man who, in his mature years, went from being a scientist to a composer. And he's going to be sharing with us the journey that he has experienced, and we'll be playing, of course, excerpts from his music. I think for those of you that might be interested in how one develops the career or shift into a career, what difference in going from science into music? The worlds seemingly are not even connected, but we'll find out more. On Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Cindy Mongoggle, and we're going to be having fun with Cindy. She is just a doll. Cindy is a psychic, but she also is a person that has a magnificent creative streak. She's got a book called Queen Dies Fairy Recipe Book. So we're going to be finding out about some of those wonderful recipes. And speaking of recipes, I have this wonderful one-pot recipe for pork that I think that you will love. If you enjoy flavorful foods, you will really enjoy this. So have a pad of paper and pen handy. Again, you can give me a call if you'd like today, 888-815-9756, and I'll be delighted to answer any questions you might have. George Matthew Adams had a comment that I found very interesting, but I think I'd rather talk about Ruskin. You know why? Because we've been talking about volunteer work. People that are donating maybe a few hours a week, many as little as an hour a week, or maybe just a couple of hours a month because they're very, very busy. But they're committed to doing something. And I came across this quote by Ruskin that I really liked. And this is what he said. You will find it less easy to uproot faults than to choke them by gaining virtues. Do not think of your faults, still less of others' faults. In every person who comes near you, look for what is good and strong. Honor that. Try to imitate it, and your faults will drop off like dead leaves when their time comes. We were talking about the Guardian Angels during the first part of the show. This is an organization that was founded by people that saw what destructive thinking and actions do to a society. Many of those that ended up becoming a part of the Guardian Angels had been part of that destructive environment when they were exposed to people that had different, especially men, that had different perspectives and were there to assist them to grow up and into the better part of themselves, they gave back to that very organization. And as it was stated, it's still going on today. They started, I believe, about 25 years ago. When you can focus on someone's strengths, it makes a difference. When you are not of the mindset where you're looking for the worst in everything, and instead you will focus on what is really the positive side, that doesn't mean you're Pollyannish. It means that those that come in contact with you have an option of stepping up to standard. And I think that that's important. I think we do need to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. Talk is so cheap. But when you're able to demonstrate to others who you are, your standards. We all have things we can improve upon. There's not a one of us that can't pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and say, boy, can I improve in this area. We all have to do that. And it's when we're mindful about who we are that we can be more compassionate and understanding with others. But we need to stand true for what we really represent. And that is so important. That's where the power is. You don't worry about trying to change the world because you can't change the world. I can't tell you how many people I've encountered through the years that say, oh, I want to save the world, or I want to be able to be this person that's recognized by the world. Do you know how big this world really is? I don't care how famous you are. There's going to come a day when you're going to get a real wake-up call because you're going to talk to someone there and say, who are you? I don't know who you are. So it's who you are in character, in quality, and in essence. Who are you? Be the best you possibly can. Set those standards for yourself. You will be so glad that you did. You will come out and people will say, I want to be like you. I want to be like you. I think that's one of the nicest compliments you can ever get from anyone, is when they say, wow, you're that. You've got something special that I see in you. I want to be like you. Often it'll surprise you. That happened to me one day, and it was a very humbling experience. There was a young woman that came running out to me and saying, Donna, please, I want to be so much like you. When I get to be an older woman like you, she was in her early 30s, she said, I want to be like you. And I thought, what is it that she sees? I don't understand this. And sometimes we can't see ourselves. But I realized later, after talking with someone, that what she saw was self-confidence, assurance, and that gave her an example of something she could reach for herself. And we need to remember that as we go through life with all of our imperfections. If we're constantly willing to be the best we can be, we're going to have an impact on someone, somewhere, that's going to make a difference in their life, and it's going to make a difference in such a way that they'll have hope, they'll have purpose, and they'll have passion for living. Aren't those individuals in your life that you look at them and you say, they represent what I want to reach for? Are they perfect? Heavens no. But they may have qualities of character that you really admire. And that's what you need to remember. Your mind, your attitudes, your perceptions, they belong to you. And you know what? If you don't like some of your attitudes and your perceptions, you can change them. That's your right and privilege as an individual. And it boils down to personal responsibility and accountability. Part of learning in life is growing into yourself and being comfortable in your own skin. So remember, be aware. Look for the strengths of an individual. Understand they're going to have to go through their growing pains just like you have. And they have the right and privilege to fall down, scrape their knees, break their nose, maybe even crack their head. But it's okay. They're going to have to learn. Nobody's exempt from those lessons. But if you're a good example and you've gone through life and through tough times, you may find you're going to say, wow, if you can do it, so can I. So be an example. Take pride in who you are. Be comfortable in your own skin. And realize you're an individual. And as an individual, you have special talents that you're meant to use and bring into this world to make this world a much better place. And you're needed. Believe me, you really need it, just like the people we were talking about in the first part of the program. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break, and hey, have that pad of paper and pen handy, and don't forget, if you want to talk to me today, you can, 888-815-9756. We're going to be talking about a delicious recipe, one pot, that's all, crock pot special, Dutch oven special, easy, adobo pork, yum, good stuff. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to share this fabulous recipe with you because it integrates so many luscious, yummy flavors. And it's a type of dish, it's in a Latin American dish. It's called adobo pork. Now, pork is one of the favorite meats among the Latin Americans and also in many areas of Southeast Asia. It has just been a favorite for centuries. Now, this is a particular version of a Latin American style dish, and this is made in a one pot. And there are things that you can do. You can use quinoa, which is high protein, absolutely amazing. I just learned about this recently, and it's been around for centuries. So, you know, don't feel badly if you've never heard of it. I would want to pronounce it quinoa, but it's quinoa, and you can substitute the rice and broth in this recipe with 3/4 cup of quinoa and 1 cup of broth for a more authentic Central American meal. I happened to meet a woman from Peru, and quinoa is very much a part of her meal, and that's spelled Q-U-I-N-O-A. Also, ancho chilies, which are a part of this recipe, are actually dried poblano chilies, and they're very rich in flavor, very popular among Latin American people, and they've been described as looking and sort of tasting like prunes, but they have a bite, a heat in them. And Anaheim chilies can be a substitute. So I wanted to give you that information. Now, by the way, you can use frozen pork chops, yes, if you want, without adding to cooking time. And this is something that can be prepared in an oven, in a Dutch oven. Cast iron is absolutely wonderful. Or you can use a crock pot. I love crock pots. They are so easy to use. Now, here are the ingredients. You're going to need 1 cup of arborio rice, and that's spelled A-R-B-O-R-I-O, rice. You're going to need 1 cup plus 2 tablespoons of broth. You could use any broth that you like, or you can just use water. So that's 1 cup plus 2 tablespoons of broth or water. You need 2 ancho chilies. You want to de-stem them. You want to seed them and then chop them. And remember, whenever you're working with fresh chilies, either wear plastic gloves so that you don't get any of the oils into your skin, or you can, actually, if you want, you can buy them canned where they've already been processed. But when you buy them fresh, it really makes a difference. And, of course, you can use, as I said a moment ago, Anaheim chilies. You're going to need 1/4 onion. You want to chop that up. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of oregano, and the dried oregano is the best. 1/4 teaspoon of cumin. Ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, 1/4 teaspoon of allspice, and that's ground allspice. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, and then 4 tablespoons of orange juice, 2 teaspoons of lime juice, and then 2 pork chops, about an inch thick. And you can use the center cut, the loin. And if you buy them at the store, you want to debone them before you put them in the pot. You can do that. If you're going to put them in the pot as is, with the bone included, then just add about 10 extra minutes to the time. A 15-ounce can of corn kernels, you want to drain it. Or I'd say use fresh corn, about, you know, a little bit less than a pound of fresh corn kernels. And then 1 green pepper, and you want to cut that into very thin strips. Now, this is how easy it is. You can take your oven. I'm going to give you 2 methods. The oven needs to be at 450 degrees. You need a 2-quart Dutch oven and a lid, and you want to spray the inside of the Dutch oven and the lid with your vegetable oil. And then your rice, and if you don't have arborio rice, then use regular rice. You want to put your rice in a strainer under cold water until the water runs clear, and that's with your arboreal rice. If you're going to use white rice, that's not going to be necessary. And then you put it into your pot, and you add your broth or water, and you just stir the rice in the water, and then you make sure that the rice is in a smooth layer. And then you want to cut the tops off of the chilies, knock the seeds out, and then you chop that up. And in a small bowl, you want to mix together your chilies, your onion, your oregano, your cumin, your pepper, your allspice, your cider vinegar, orange juice, and lime juice. Put that all in a bowl, whisk it, 30 seconds worth. Put your pork chops into the pot and pour half of this mixture over the meat. Then you take your corn, your green pepper, layer that on top, and pour the rest of the mixture over it. Now, with this, you cover it and you bake it in the oven at 450 degrees for 45 minutes. It comes out just utterly fabulous. If you want to put this in the crock pot, just put it into the crock pot following the exact same directions. If you're wanting this to cook, you know, all day long, then put it on simmer, or put it on 200, 250 degrees, and when you come home, all of this is going to be done. Now, what is going to happen is that the rice is going to be absorbing all of this moisture. Now, if you're like me and you like brown rice, substitute your brown rice, but understand it's going to take longer. I love the idea of a crock pot. I really do. And it just saves a lot of stress. It's using very little energy. You can fix it and leave it. Absolutely awesome. And the flavors marry wonderfully. So whether you use a Dutch oven in a 450-degree oven where it takes an hour, or you put it into your crock pot and let it cook for 8 hours on low, you're still going to have these wonderful flavors. And I'll tell you something. If you are having company and you wanted to fix something in advance, you could do this the night before and just let it do its thing in the crock pot, and then you're ready for your guests, and it'll be absolutely wonderful. I just really think crock pots are great, and Dutch ovens are wonderful. But this is a one-pot meal that is going to be absolutely fabulous with freshly baked, crusty bread that you can, you know, get at your local grocery store or make your own, whatever you prefer, and a wonderful salad. Oh, you've got a meal fit for a king or a queen. So I just wanted to share that with you because it's a hale and hearty recipe that I think goes a long way. And you could do some little adaptations to it, whatever your imagination feels like working with. It's just absolutely wonderful. Now, I know we don't have a whole bunch of time left here, but I wanted to give some information that was sent to me by a woman by the name of Latice. She said, I wanted to give you information on Operation Hope, and I mentioned this yesterday. Hope Coalition America is the only financial emergency preparedness and recovery service in the U.S. Through partnerships with industry leaders in a wide range of industries spanning banking, financial services, insurance, social, and community services, they provide financial and economic assistance to those affected by natural disasters, which we have an abundance of. When they occur, organizations such as FEMA and the American Red Cross go to work immediately to address health, safety, and infrastructure problems. But financial issues affect far more people after a disaster than property damage or personal injury. And that's where the national networks fall short at this time. Now, the Counselors for Hope Coalition America are full-time employees and volunteers from the banking, financial services, and insurance industries. Through the Hope Crisis Hotline and their on-site counseling centers, they'll be able to help people recover financially from natural disasters, foreclosures, and other emergencies. So you can go into Hope Coalition America or just go into the website Operation Hope, and you can download their free emergency financial first aid kit or personal disaster preparedness guide. And you can find out how prepared you are. This is very, very important, and I have other information that I probably will be sharing tomorrow about FEMA. So pass this along to those that maybe you know and love that are in some of these disasters areas, and they just need to know about it. Help is available. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so glad you were able to share time with me. Tomorrow we'll be right here, same time, same place. Bye for now.